Welcome to Flunking the Written, a fully spoiled Buffy the Vampire Slayer podcast in which two Uber fans break down every episode of the show. Join Kimberly and Megan every other Tuesday as they overanalyze each scene and discuss the Buffyverse at large. Now let's meet up with the Scoobies and get into this episode of Flunking the Written.
What can I say? I flunked the written.
Well, Kim, the end of the high school years. We have made it to graduation day, part two.
When we first started this, I didn't think we'd ever get this far. So it felt like such a long way away, the end of season three.
Yeah, I think about that all the time. I'm just like, God, we're already like at the end of season three, and yet we still have so much left. But also, we've made it to the end of season three, but there's so much left.
We still have nine. We still have counting Angel.
We have nine seasons
left.
And we've technically only made it to like through like two and a half, because the first season's short.
Yeah, true.
We're in it for the long haul. This episode was written and directed by Joss Whedon, and the DVD blurb is, Buffy, her friends, and all the students of Sunnydale High prepare to face off against the mayor and his horde of vampires in a seemingly hopeless battle to save their town. I think what's interesting about this is that, like, it really is kind of just saving the town, right? Like, is the mayor never really seemed to be like, was the mayor all about world domination? I know they talk about apocalypse several times, you know, throughout the show, but do we count this as an apocalypse? Or would he have just like taken over Sunnydale and ate people casually?
I don't know. Well, I mean, the people in Sunnydale probably wouldn't have cared if their mayor had become a giant snake. I've always, when I count the apocalypses, apocalypses, I always count this one.
Gotta figure out what that plural is.
Yeah. There's two in season three, two in season four, and then the end of all the other seasons. So nine.
There we go. Works for me.
But only eight if you don't count the end of season three with the mayor. But I think it counts.
Yeah. Does Adam count?
I mean,
Does Adam count? Does Adam have... I don't remember if Adam wants to destroy the world. I don't remember what Adam wants to do.
I think it was just...
That would eventually happen.
Yeah. Kind of like with the mayor, he'd eventually have eaten everyone in Sunnydale and wanted to expand.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe that wasn't the immediate goal, but eventually. We're already way off topic. Hey, this episode starts right where the last one left off. We're still on the roof outside. Yeah. Right outside Faith's apartment, post-battle. Buffy's still staring off into the distance. And finally, she lays down the knife and finds a ladder on the side of the building and climbs down from the roof.
Just in time.
Just in time. Because there he is. There's the mayor looking through the broken window. And one of his hench vamps... I saw that term somewhere, and I was just like, that's a good way to describe him. The hench vamps. One of his hench vamps came out.
The script says vamp henchman.
Ah.
Not as good as hench vamp.
Not as good as hench vamps. But one of them comes out and says that there's no sign of anybody, and the mayor's kind of like saying, well, they have to figure out where Faith is. She probably took the fight outside. She doesn't like to be cooped up. And like, you know, the vampire starts to make excuses about the ascension, which of course, the mayor's main goal, right? That would make sense that would what he would want to be focused on. But no, he is very, very upset. And in fact, screams at the vamp that they have to find them, and then starts like talking to himself about how Faith's a good girl and she'll be all right. She'll be all right. She'll be all right. And this part, while I love it, also makes the mayor like way more like confusing and complex to me. He genuinely seems to care about Faith, and it's the tool that is used to defeat him in ways in this episode, but it's also just, it's such a sick and twisted way that he cares about her, because you can see throughout the season the ways that he's manipulated and used her against herself. But like here, he actually is fearful and panicked.
Really upset, yeah.
Yeah. And it's very genuine. I mean, oddly, and there would be no reason. Yeah, there would be no reason for him to be acting here.
Right. And like either in the last episode or the one right before it, he threatened to get rid of her if she failed him.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like, okay. I like how they, like, the second Buffy disappears over the ladder, we see the mayor and his...
Oh, yeah.
...hench vamp.
There's so, always...
Like, she didn't hear them come in. They didn't, like...
The convenient timings of this episode will happen, will be a topic of discussion. That is definitely something I have notes on later as well. But anyway... We go to our opening credits, then we come back in the library. Xander is coming in with some coffee and calls it a lighter fluid or something like that. And
finest Colombian lighter fluid.
Delicious. Giles says it's horrible, and Xander mentions that he's supposed to be drinking tea anyway. And I love this line of, tea is soothing. I wish to be tense.
I love that line, too. It's a good one.
But they're continuing to try to figure out anything about the demon Ulvulcan. Ulvulcan? Sure, we'll go with that. But they're trying to find more out about the demon that the mayor is presumably turning into. And Cordelia comes in and is very upset, demands an explanation.
For what?
Wesley.
Inbreeding?
Yeah. Woof. And I find it, like, is it weirder that Wesley called Cordelia or that Cordelia comes to the school to confront Giles?
It's so weird, like, no matter which way you look at it.
Both of them are like, this doesn't make sense. Like, they're not in a relationship. Why would he call sobbing to her?
He could hardly speak. He was so upset. Oh, man. Yeah. Oh, it's so just like.
Why?
It's weird. Yeah. I kind of love it, though.
And then Cordelia comes to the school to be like, you heard him. Like,
she's
gonna going to
wag
on?
Her finger and make Wesley's life better.
Yeah.
Giles explains that Buffy quit the council and she no longer needs a watcher. And then Cordelia makes the valid point of, well, you got fired and you still hang around like a big loser. Why can't he?
Xander's like, hey, we're trying to stop a massacre here. Why don't you help? And she's just like, sure.
Oh, Cordelia part of the team again. I love it. But anyway, she sits down to help and then says that Buffy always thinks about herself.
Yeah.
And then we cut to Angel, who I'm sure Buffy's not thinking about at all right now.
And Willow is sitting beside Angel's bed and dabbing his forehead with a cloth, which is something that always happens in movies and TV. And I don't know that anyone has ever done that for me.
Yeah.
When I've been sick, ever. Or I've ever. It's just, I mean, you bring somebody water or snacks and you give them medicine and fluff their pillows, but like wiping their brow with a cloth. That's always the very first thing done media. But it's like, it's not a real life thing.
Yeah. It's the universal sign of caring. For someone, though, isn't it?
But not in real life. Anyway, yeah. But yes, it is the universal sign on TV and movies and stuff. But they have a little conversation, and Angel thinks for a minute that she's Buffy and kisses her hand.
Mm-hmm.
Very funny. He realizes that she's Willow, and Angel wants to know where she is, and then drifts back off to sleep. And Willow goes out to see Oz in the other room. Willow tells him that he's delirious. He thought I was Buffy, and Oz is like, you too, huh?
It's
pretty funny.
It's like, if you blink, you miss it, but it's one of the funniest jokes out there.
Yeah. And they have a sweet little moment talking about how everything's really bad, but they had a really good night.
Mm-hmm.
Very sweet, romantic. Yep. And then Buffy comes in.
Yes.
And they want to know if she found Faith. And she's like, yeah. She shakes her head kind of and asks about Angel. And they say, you know, he comes in and out, but the pain is less now. And in the script, it says that Buffy knows full well what that means.
Mm-hmm.
But then she tells them to leave, which they do.
Yeah.
Because it never occurs to either one of them that Buffy will make Angel drink her blood.
Yeah.
Because he's not the person she always will save, you know, unless he's trying to end the world.
Yeah, it's not the smartest thing they've ever done. I put that note in there as well. It's like, they probably should have, you know, saw this coming.
Yeah. Especially when she said she didn't have faith.
Yeah.
It doesn't occur to them there's another Slayer there.
There's two Slayers? What?
Yeah.
When did this happen?
There's a very dramatic scene. Buffy forces Angel to drink from her. She insists that he's got to live. She's going to live. And he tries to stop her. And they talk about how it'll killer. And Buffy's like, no, not if you don't take it all.
Yeah.
And then she basically...
Not making a good argument there.
She basically beats him up until he drinks from her, which is strange because, like, she's beat him up a lot over the years. And he's never done that before, trying to drink from her. He just usually, you know, hits her back.
Mm-hmm. I think there's ways I can explain that, but let's go ahead and finish up this scene real quick. So yeah, she punches him several times. He eventually turns into his vamp face and she positions him where he is against her neck and he sinks his teeth in and starts to drink. They fall to the ground and in a very, very thinly veiled metaphor, have an orgasm together as he's sucks her blood. It lingers for a while on Buffy's face as it zooms out and it's kind of setting in that, oh yeah, this is me kind of dying here a little bit. And then Angel pulls away and says Buffy's name several times.
I will put it in the script. She screams.
Oh.
She finally manages to scream and then he pulls it away.
Oh. Interesting.
But that, yeah, she didn't do that.
So yeah, I can buy the fact that she was able to kind of force him to drink in this moment because of his delirium and the poison's effects and bringing out that animal instinct in that moment and kind of causing the demon to surface, if you will. It was very dangerous. Like, if he had agreed to be, like, aware while he drank from her, then I could maybe see the argument of, you know, if you don't take it all, maybe it'll be enough to cure you, but I won't die. But to actually beat him until he turns the vamp face shows here very plainly that Buffy doesn't care. If she dies and Angel lives, that's fine. That's where she's at. So her whole argument of it won't kill me if you just don't take all my blood. But then she immediately starts beating him and forcing him to drink her as a very animalistic vampire desires. And it's also been framed in the episode before about, like, you know, the Slayer blood and how hard it is to not drink Slayer blood. We've talked about that before as well. So
I kind of see it as, like, she was telling him that, not if you don't take it all, when she was trying to convince him to do it.
Yeah.
And he kept saying no, he wasn't going to do it. So she's like, yeah, I'm going to make you now.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of.
Yeah. I don't think that there was ever a situation here where Buffy thought that there was absolutely no chance of her dying.
No, of course not.
But I think that
the chance got lower, she didn't care.
As Angel was less willing to, as she knew that Angel wouldn't do it willingly, she forced it to be an even more dangerous situation than it possibly could have had she convinced him to drink from her in a more of himself state rather than bringing out the demon. And we've talked a little bit before about how the demon's always in Angel and you can kind of force it to surface, and that kind of explains the Enemies episode where it's not so much Angel pretending to be Angelus but Angel letting Angelus out a little bit is how I like to view it. So this is Angelus sucking Buffy's blood to save Angel, kind of weird headcanon that I have going in circles in my head. But yeah, Buffy is very willing to die in this scenario if it is the only way to save Angel, which is interesting because she has a conversation with Dawn in season 7 about how no boy is worth your life, not ever. And
yeah,
I think that shows some growth and understanding that we get from Buffy when she matures and understands that I don't think season 7 Buffy would have done this is basically what I'm saying. I don't think there's a chance in hell that season 7 Buffy would have risked her life to do something like this again. I think
that Angel would always be the exception, though.
I'm not even convinced she'd do it for Angel. I just don't. I think Buffy matured so much beyond this point. Like, because she has a conversation with Giles in season 7 where she's just like, I would let Dawn die to destroy the world now. Like, she says that plainly in season 7.
She says what?
She tells Giles that she would let Dawn die to destroy to save the world. So, like, I feel like that's showing that she doesn't play those same life and death games that she used to.
Well, like, there's a scene in season 5 where she tells him that she's not going to let...
Yeah, and that's the difference. Season 5 Buffy, I think, would still probably do something like this. Season 7 Buffy is jaded as hell.
But they're talking about season 5 Buffy. They're talking about how she destroyed someone that she loved. She destroyed Angel to save the world.
Mm-hmm.
And she won't do it again. She says, I won't destroy someone I love to save the world again.
Yeah.
So it like went from she would do it to she wouldn't do it. And then she's back to
she would do it again. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's an interesting, weird character arc. But yeah, this isn't saving the world. This isn't anything like that. This is just saving Angel. And at this point, Buffy is so in love and so cannot stand the idea of Angel dying again that she's willing to die herself in his place, basically. Which is weird, considering that he's about to leave town. And that, in fact, does not change at all. What a way to like really just basically destroy any last chance of this relationship ever having a happy ending, being like, okay, so like here we know he's already gonna leave. We already have this plan lined out. You know what would be really fun is before that though, have him get hurt and then cause Buffy to go and try to kill Faith to cure him, but fail, and then go and feed herself to him and have all of that tension. Like, I mean, you already broke them up and he's already leaving town. You don't have to have all this extra drama to make a point here. We know.
Yeah. Yeah, well, so the next scene. Are you done with that one?
Yeah, I'm good.
Okay. So the next scene is him come bursting through the doors of the hospital. He's carrying Buffy. He says, you know, she lost blood. Give her blood. She got bit, you know. And the doctor's asking questions and Angel is just not into it. He is... just over and over again. It's just like, give her blood. She needs blood. As the doctor's trying to find out. Okay, so I never saw this. As many times as I've watched the episode, I've never seen this. It says that he pulls Angel aside, looks at him hard, and Angel is practically tripping, unable to contain the energy of Buffy's blood in him.
Mm.
I never saw that, like, that coming from him. I guess, you know, he does, break the door frame.
Yeah.
But, like, that I always just thought Angel did that because he was upset and he was worried about Buffy. It never occurred to me it's because he had Slayer blood.
Oh, yeah. That's interesting. Yeah, I always read it as just like him being panicked because he thinks Buffy's not going to make it.
Yeah, and he doesn't look like he's like tripping or anything or over-energized or anything like that.
Yeah.
But apparently that was what he was supposed to look like.
Interesting. Yeah, I wish they had played with that more.
Yeah, the doctor thinks that you two been doing drugs. He's like, you want her to live, you'll have to be straight with me. And Angel says she's clean. Kind of goes along with Angel supposed to look like he's on something.
Mm-hmm. So. Yeah.
I thought that part was real interesting.
Yeah, I think that's really interesting, too. I wish they played that up more.
Angel, you know, he kind of goes into the waiting area to find a phone to call people. And then the camera goes past him where right now another girl has been brought into the hospital. And the mayor is standing there talking to the doctor. It's Faith.
Yeah.
And she has broken bones and damage to her kidney and head trauma with a lot of blood loss.
So you remember when I said earlier about conveniences?
Yeah. So the mayor's looking at Faith and kind of like touches her hair and says, it's your day.
Yeah.
Strangely.
Yeah.
And the nurse comes up to the doctor and in front of these other people, like the mayor, because HIPAA's not a thing at this hospital. She's like, we have another young girl with severe blood loss. You know, you have to come help with an antecubical cut down. I don't know what that is, but I'm sure it's something accurately medical or whatever.
Sounds medically.
Yeah. And the doctor's like, all right, and leaves. And the mayor hears it and is like, huh. So then he turns and he goes to where they are keeping Buffy, who conveniently is all by herself.
Yeah.
Because these doctors that they need, took a longer route to across the hallway than the mayor did.
Like, literally was just given instructions on what she needed. And, like, she's just alone.
Yeah, because the mayor took a shortcut.
Yeah, the shortcut that connects these two rooms. Yeah. Because convenience.
And the mayor tries to smother Buffy.
Mm-hmm.
And a nurse comes in, is like, no. And just wonder, in all of the next scene that happens, nobody recognizes that this is the mayor. Or acknowledges that this is the mayor of their town. So the nurse is trying to pull him off, saying somebody call security. Angel comes in, grabs the mayor and pulls him away. And the mayor is messed up. He's like, your murderous little fiend. Did you see what she did to my Faith? And he is just, he does it really well.
Mm-hmm.
Threatens a whole lot. Angel kind of throws him back and the mayor's like, well, somebody's been eating his spinach. So now we're back to being the mayor again.
Yeah.
And not like crazed. And they kind of threaten each other a little bit and the mayor leaves. But there's security guards, doctors, the nurse, and none of these people recognize this man as the mayor of Sunnyvale. And, I mean, also, he just attempted murder, and they just let him leave. They just let him leave.
So.
Everybody.
Oh, so I have so many things to say about this scene. And none of it's important. All of it's petty shit, but I don't care.
Okay, go for it. I want to hear it.
So
that is the point of this podcast. I want to hear it.
So you have Angel come in and he's crazed enough to like rip the handle off and all of that, right? So that's your first like warning. Then this whole shot is a one-er. So it's all one take. It's camera following throughout this entire scene. So we know all of this is happening simultaneously. There's no cuts in between. This is all happening at the same time. So when he leaves there, after ripping the door handle off, is just allowed to like go and like chill in the lobby with no concern for him at all, he leaves and walks past a security guard, right? Who was standing like right outside as Angel and this doctor were having this altercation that caused Angel to rip part of the door off, and the security guard's just chilling, didn't hear a thing, wasn't concerned at all. And so,
Sunnyvale Hospital.
Angel walks around, does the phone call, stuff like that. And we get around to Faith's side of things. So, like, timeline wise, I assume Buffy kind of like in her haze after stabbing Faith, climbed down to the streets, walked directly to Angel's mansion, fed herself to Angel, and Angel, as soon as he came out of it, rushed her to the hospital. So not a huge amount of time has passed. Yet at this point, we have found Faith. We have gotten her to the hospital and done a full, like, diagnosis of all of her injuries and have, like, a complete outlook of what her recovery is going to be like.
Like, she's not going to wake up. Yeah. And she's had CT scans and
all of this
tests and all of that stuff. Yeah.
So there's that. But then we come back around and then the mayor tries to like suffocate Buffy and the nurse comes in and literally shouts for security. And we know that there was just moments before a security guard standing right outside the door and he's still not giving any craps about his job. He's just checked out today. He's not going to respond to anything that might require a security guard.
I mean, maybe he's been a security guard at that hospital for a long
enough to be like, I ain't, if someone's shouting for security, I'm going the other direction.
Yeah.
Oh, man. So, yeah, like, I just laughed when I saw that security guard because I knew it was coming up and I was just like, well, maybe he appears later, but I feel like he should have already shown up because, you know, Angel's acting kind of crazed.
Yeah,
no, he just doesn't do anything. I don't think you see him other than when Angel casually walks past him and he's just standing there. He's like, yep, I'm at my post. Oh, man. So, yeah, that's my petty comments about this. Beautiful performances. They did great. Lots of emotion. Lots of wonderful character moments happening. But also, none of that makes sense.
No, none of it makes sense. Yeah, so then everybody arrives at the hospital. Giles, Willow, Xander, Oz, they all come in. Which, I'm assuming they left Cordelia at the library by herself?
Yeah, I guess.
Or she's went home or something.
She's studying up on the demon now.
And so Angel fills them in on what happened. And kind of weirdly, they blame him.
Mm-hmm.
Which I've never, ever liked. Because, you know, Buffy pretty much made him do it. And, like, they all know Buffy.
Yeah.
They could probably figure out that Buffy was like, yeah, you're going to do that. It was Buffy's idea.
Mm-hmm.
They know Buffy. They know Angel. They should realize.
Yeah.
I think that Buffy came up with this plan, not Angel. But anyway, they tell Angel to go home because the sun will be up soon. And while Xander does, like, say some insulting stuff to him, Giles just kind of looks and his tone sounds mean.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah.
Yeah. I think it's all, like, you know, yeah, you can say from the outside that they should know that Angel didn't do this willingly and there was stuff that happened and blah this and blah that. But you also know that this, I think every reaction made sense for that character. That's exactly what Xander would say. That's the exact kind of tone Giles would have. Like that, that makes sense to me in this moment.
Yeah, see, I have never liked how they treated Angel in this moment. Because, like, he didn't do it on purpose. Buffy made him do it. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of...
I think it's weird.
But he doesn't defend himself at all.
Yeah.
Which is also like Angel.
I think it's weird that they also dropped in the vampire canon. I guess it was just to make sure that people weren't going to freak out that she would come out back as a vampire again. Because it doesn't play any other role in the episode. But yeah. Willow's like, well, she won't be a vampire. And Angel's like, no, she didn't feed off of me. So, like, I guess it's just to make sure people don't be like, oh, she's going to come back as a vampire. No, no, we're not doing that.
oddly, not in the script.
Huh. I wonder if that's something they just thought of on the day and they're just like, oh, we need to slip this in, make sure it's there.
Yeah. I guess they came up with that later.
Oh, man. But yeah, Angel slinks away, all defeated. That's okay. He's going to go get his own show soon. He'll be fine. All right. Now this scene.
Okay. Well, stuff happens here. This is a scene. There are words.
Is that your summary? We yes. move past the dream sequence now? We've got it?
I hate dream sequences. I know there's so much we have to talk about. And so many things are said that we have to discuss, but I hate dream sequences.
Oh, I love it.
Actually, a lot of times I skip the last episode of season 4.
Oh, I will have so much to say about Restless. When we get to that episode, it'll just be me talking for 4 hours and you're just like, uh-huh, Megan. Yeah, uh-huh.
Well, that episode is arguably the one I've watched the least. This one is the only ones I skip.
Oh, man.
I just don't like dream sequences in that like whole episode is that.
Yes. So, Buffy is at Faith's apartment. There's also a cat chilling. And oddly. Buffy asks who's going to look after him. Faith says it's a she, and aren't these things supposed to take care of themselves? They have a back and forth about higher powers guiding us, and Faith's like, that's not what I meant. And Buffy's kind of talking about something she's supposed to be doing, and then we have the infamous...
Miles to go. Little Miss Muffet counting down from 730.
Great. Riddles.
Ah, it's so good, Kim. How can you not like this stuff?
I'm with Buffy on the oh great riddles thing.
It's so good. So we talked briefly right before the fight. Faith mentions Buffy being dressed in big sister clothes and that that's supposed to be like a foreshadow to Dawn. And you're like, I don't get it.
It just doesn't seem like it is.
Yeah. I actually had never really noticed that one before, but I could definitely see that would be a nod to that as well, or it just is a nice coincidence. This, however, this Miles to Go, Little Miss Muffet counting down from 730, I'm not going to say that they had everything exactly figured out, because I don't think they ever did, but there is something to be said that if you do the math right, you know that at the end of season 5, if you continue with the 22 episode arc, you're going to end up with the 100th episode of Buffy being the season finale of season 5. So 730 counting down the days, meaning 2 years from now, because it's the season finale of season 3. So there's 730 days over a 2 year period. So that's kind of the idea there, that they're foreshadowing that something big's going to happen at the end of season 5, because it's the 100th episode. And obviously something big's going to happen in the 100th episode that also happens to be a season finale. So they knew if they were going to get there, they were going to have something big. So they got to foreshadow to that.
Okay. They didn't actually plan Buffy's death this soon, though. They did that because the show was switching networks.
But what I'm saying is that this is a foreshadow that will cover anything. Yeah, when you say something big's going to happen in 2 years, well, duh, it's the 100th episode on a season finale. Of course something big's going to happen in 2 years.
Okay, so we're not predicting that Buffy's going to die then.
We're planting a seed. I like that they went with with Buffy's death. I'm not going to say that that was a guarantee and that he had planned it out that far ahead, because I don't think that they ever have anything planned out that far ahead, because it turns out when you're doing a serialized television show, things change all the time. You lose actors, you gain new characters, stuff works, stuff doesn't work, and you have to keep rewriting the story. So you're not going to have it all planned out and have it go exactly the way that you have it planned out. So he may have already been thinking about this as a possibility, as being the end of Buffy's story or a Buffy death scene kind of deal. But he may have not been thinking of that when he was planting this seed. But by doing the sheer math and being like, oh, we know that if we make it to a season 5 finale, we want to make that a big finale. So let's plant a seed counting down to that. But I really like that it ended up being death because of the miles to go mark and the idea of like miles to go meaning reaching a destination. So, like, it works really well with the fact that it does end up being Buffy dying in that episode. Little Miss Muffet, I think, is more of a focused lean on the idea of a younger sister for Buffy, because I know that they had that planned pretty early on, but they just tie that in Real Me, which is Dawn's first episode, when she has the guy go up and say, I know you, curds and whey, referencing back to Little Miss Muffet. So they're setting stuff up, and then later on, it works out that they can pay it off and tie it into each other. But if something had changed, and they had decided, we don't want to do the Dawn storyline after all, we're just going to cut that because we don't think it's going to work. The fans aren't going to like it. Then it's just a throwaway line. Like, this is how you foreshadow. And the thing is, like Buffy the Vampire Slayer is really good with their foreshadowing, because they foreshadow every possible thing they can and leave enough flexibility in what they foreshadow to where it can be worked into different things. Mm-hmm. And it's really clever the way that they do things. It's
kind of the way they do Willow and the magic.
Yeah.
They start foreshadowing that in season 2.
Yeah. And they see possibilities and they start planting those seeds. But like we talk about, oh, look at all the times where it's showing that, you know, Willow has a darkness in her and all the foreshadows to Dark Willow. Well, there's also all of the foreshadowing to a Dark Giles storyline. They never did a Dark Giles storyline, but man, is there foreshadowing for it. I mean, so like, I think people get like really excited when they find these things, and I enjoy them too, but it's also like people are talking about, oh, they're so well planned out, and it's just like, nah, it's just they come up with a lot of ideas and they throw them in the scripts, and then they're clever enough to remember when they reference stuff before, or remembering all the different storylines that they have playing in their head, and actually tie back into it. Like, the way that they integrate this stuff is really good, but there's definitely dropped foreshadowing all throughout the show.
Well, like, they kind of do, not really foreshadowing, but they kind of do hints about a gay character from season 2 onward. And it's, they do hints for Xander and Willow.
Yes. And that was another intentional thing.
Like you said before, that they had always planned for it to be one of them. They just didn't know which one.
Yeah.
So they kind of hinted about both. If you pay attention, you can see it.
Yeah. So this is definitely something that they're known for. But I just love that this counting down from 730 line as just being like, that's just math. They just did some math and were just like, hey, in 2 years from now, it's going to be the 100th episode. And that's probably going to be a pretty big episode. If we get there, we're going to do something big, something big enough that we can have this prophetic Slayer dream. So, makes sense to me. I also like that there's a cat, not just because I like cats, that is part of the reason, but also because there's been several references to Faith wanting a dog, and even like in the dream state, she can't get what she wants.
She's got a cat.
She gets a cat instead. But there is the comment about being able to take care of themselves and stuff like that. And I think that that's also a reference to the idea of not only Slayers, but like women in general. There might be some commentary there that you could glean from that if you choose to, because it, you know, Buffy references it as a him, and then Faith's like, it's a she, and aren't these things supposed to be able to take care of themselves? Which is kind of like the thing about cats, but also, you know, part of growing up in a societal structure that we've seen is that women are the caretakers and they have to take care of everybody else and also themselves.
And themselves.
So it's a nice interpretation that I like to look at. But also, this has been a season of Buffy kind of rejecting the patriarchy in many ways in her life. She's left the Watchers Council. She's fighting freaking Mayor Richard Wilkins, the freaking personified patriarchy. Like, I mean...
There's an argument for that.
I mean, he is a giant penis at the end of this episode. It's not... That's another very thinly veiled metaphor there that we're working with. So, like, there's something to be read in all of that. They continue to talk in some cryptic dream language. Faith looks at the window that's broken, saying that it's never going to be fixed. And Buffy says, "What about you?" And Faith says, "Scar tissue, it fades, it all fades. Human weakness never goes away, not even his." Which is
nice. Yeah, so Faith's trying to help now.
Yes, I like this a lot.
I really like that they have her trying to help.
Yes. And there's
after this.
I went on some kind of weird, I don't know if it was an old forum post or something. It was back from like early 2000s. So it's just like, you know, when the hardcore Buffy fans were all like, "Our show's over. We have to talk about Buffy all the time so we can, you know, still be part of this conversation." And that's gone on for another 20 years. But So, but they were talking about, is this Faith or is this Buffy's version of Faith? Or is this Buffy's dream or is this a shared dream? Like, and
I think it's a shared dream.
I've always read it as a shared dream. That's always been my preferred way to read it. And people are always a little confused if you read it as a shared dream. Why is Faith doing this? And I think it's because you have that line where Faith's like, you know, there's a lot of new stuff in my head when she's talking about all the riddles and stuff. Like, I think there's something deep in Faith's subconscious that still very much realized that the mayor's the bad guy and needs to be stopped. But there is a little exchange between Buffy and Faith. Is this your mind or mine? And Faith's like, beats me.
Yeah.
So even they're not really sure what the scenario is. Buffy asks how she's going to take everything. And Faith says, "Not gonna. It's yours." And they kind of look around the apartment and there's like boxes of stuff. And Buffy says, "I can't use all this." And Faith says, "Just take what you need." And then she touches Buffy's cheek and says, "You're ready," with like, you know, kind of a questioning tone. And then it flashes to Buffy waking up. So we made it through the dream sequence.
Which I like to go with that. With that, Faith was telling her to get the knife.
Yeah, that's definitely
what I was like. Faith was telling her to get the mouth.
Yeah,
get the knife.
was that a Freudian slip there?
Little bit.
Buffy gets up and she goes over to where Faith is at in her bed and kisses her on the forehead. So she does get the mouth a little bit. Buffy gets a little on Faith's forehead. There you go. Which is a nice echo to when Faith kisses Buffy's forehead when they're fighting before at the end of Enemies. So yay, symmetry.
Yeah.
And then again, this hospital's just the worst, but Buffy just gets fully dressed and walks out. The whole gang's there.
Like, oh, okay. Yeah. Hi. Bye. Yeah, I'm assuming she doesn't get discharged. She just leaves.
She just leaves. Like, they don't even remember that she was there in the first place.
They ask her if she's okay, and she nods. And she asks where Angel was. And they said it's Sunny. He had to go. And Buffy's like, "Get him. Get everyone." And they're all like, "Are you sure you're all right?" And she's like, "I'm ready." And Willow says, "Ready for what?" And Buffy says, "War."
Dun, dun, dun.
Yeah. And then we have everyone, like literally everyone, except Wesley, in the library. And Buffy is talking to him and they're kind of just all staring at her. And she goes, "That's the basic plan. So am I crazy?" And the responses are nice. Willow is just like, you know, crazy is a strong word. And Giles goes, "Let's not rule that out, though."
Yeah. My question is like, what parts of the plan have already been figured out?
I mean, I think the basic, "I'm going to get him to follow me and then blow him up" part.
Yeah. They don't really, I'm guessing that's maybe what, because I know that they talk about how it hinges on her being able to control the mayor. So I think that they understand that they're going to have to come up with some kind of volcano level boom source to blow up the mayor. I think they've probably also discussed having the student body be support team, because they talked about how Xander's going to be pretty key in all all of this. So, like, they're still, like, working out the kinks. But I'm just like, so is Buffy's plan that she just literally comes like, okay, so here's my plan. We're gonna get all of the Sunnydale High seniors armed to the teeth, right? All kinds of weapons. And we're gonna have them wear their weapons under their graduation gowns. And then I'm gonna lure the mayor after he turns into a giant demon, and we're gonna blow him up. So am I crazy?
Yeah.
I think that was Buffy's pitch.
It could have been. Cordelia says, I personally don't think it's possible to come up with a crazier plan. And then Oz does come
what
up
Oz
with a crazier
does.
Plan.
We attack the mayor with hummus.
I stand corrected.
Just keeping things in perspective.
There's a nice moment, though, where Cordelia says, my point is, crazy or not, it's pretty much the only plan besides it's Buffy, and she's Slay Gal. And I'm just like, aw.
And then they kind of start figuring out the plan, like more details and
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah, not just Buffy's like, we're going to blow him up plan.
Yeah. She asked Xander about, do you remember any of your stuff from when you were soldier guy? And they talk about that. And then depending on Buffy being able to control the mayor, Giles asks her how she's going to do that. And Buffy says, Faith told me I'd have to play on his human weakness. And they ask her if that was before or after she put Faith in a coma. And Buffy's like, after. Which is, again, funny.
And then Giles asks what his weakness is, and Buffy's like, you know, I already did all this planning. Remember that old plan that I came up with called Blow Up the Mayor?
Yeah. They ask Angel, because Angel apparently hung out with him the most.
You know.
And they come up with germs. Or Angel says he's not crazy about germs, and then Cordelia wants to chase him with Ebola. virus.
Oh, it's so funny and so not in like current like 2021 context.
Yeah.
Oh god.
And Xander decides that the hummus one would be okay. And then Angel is like, Faith, that, you know, when she was hurt, he was grieving. Mm-hmm. That Faith is his weak link. He cares about her. And Buffy's like, okay, I can work with that.
And then Wesley comes in.
And Wesley comes back.
Wesley! He's so classy!
Yeah, Cordelia thinks he's so classy to come back.
Yeah.
Buffy's just like, the council isn't welcome here. I got no time for orders. And, he's just like, I'm not here for the council. Tell me how I can help. And then, yeah, Cordelia has the, he's so classy. Aren't you just so classy
line?
So
classy.
And Buffy goes, it's a start.
Yep. Aw.
Which she's supposed to look really happy when she says it's a start. It says so in the script.
No.
I think that's strange, but.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, I guess she could be happy for another person, but like, not like she ever liked him very much, you know?
Oh, man.
So then Buffy goes, there's, you know, chores for everyone. Okay, this is how it's going to lay out. And then immediately after she says that, it goes to the mayor's office where the mayor is telling his vampires and stuff, this is how it's going to lay out.
Mm-hmm.
Which is a nice little.
I like it.
Yeah. He's basically telling them that he has to eat to sustain his transformation, and they better not do any snacking.
Mm-hmm.
And he mentions that it's not a problem for the vampires to be out in the sun because there's an eclipse. Well, we go back to the library where Wesley and Buffy are figuring out there's an eclipse.
Yeah. So it's interesting. It's interesting that they have this drop in that he has to like eat in order to sustain his demon-y ways.
Like, will he turn back into a person if he doesn't eat, or will he just die?
I'm not entirely sure how that would work, but I almost thought at first, I was like, well, maybe that's just thrown in there to like explain why the vampires don't kill all the students, right? But then he says that they're allowed to kill, they're not allowed to feed.
Yeah, so he can eat dead people.
He can eat dead people. But yeah, he says that it's crucial in the first few minutes to sustain the change. So no snacking. I need them dead, but don't feed, basically. And like, so that's just like a weird like factoid that they threw in there that doesn't really have any payoff. And the only potential setup that I could explain of why that was needed kind of goes away when you realize that he instructs him to go ahead and kill the students. just don't drain them of their blood, because apparently it's the blood that's specifically needed as part of the feasting. I don't understand this demon ascension. Yeah, there's cuts back and forth here where Wesley is explaining that darkness will follow and day becomes night. So it's established that there's going to be eclipse during the ascension. And Angel's like, yes, I'm back in the game. And then Buffy instructs that means that Xander and Angel will actually have to work together if they could actually make that happen. And they have a little bit of bickering, and Buffy calls them little old ladies. And then the mayor continues to explain how the vampires are going to get there and how they're not supposed to feed. And then you see that Oz and Willow are prepping something that Willow explains as fun with chemistry. Buffy calls it volcano detail, which I think is a lovely nod. Mm-hmm. And she asks Giles if he's okay to stoke it. And he says that it seems fitting.
Which they hint that they're going to blow up the library.
Yeah. And instructed that they need weapons, more cuts back and forth. Mayor's like brutal and fast. And
well, Buffy says there's something I need to get.
Yeah.
That part's important. Yeah.
And tells them about how they gotta, you know, basically after instructing all of the vamps that they gotta kill all of these high school students, that they need to also watch the swearing is how that whole back and forth ends. So the mayor is still very much the mayor. Wholesomely evil. But yeah, plays out beautifully. Really fun. Oh, yeah. Really fun back and forths. A lot of little things.
Very
that,
much.
Like, since it's so back and, like, rapid back and forth, little things that you can get out of repeat viewings that you might not notice, especially not having the plan fully realized until you've watched the entire episode and you get to rewatch this and you're like, that's what they're doing. Oh, that's what's going on. So, yeah, really fun, fast editing and kind of setting up for the final battle.
Then we get scenes where Willow goes up to Percy and ask if can I talk to you, and then Xander goes up to Harmony and is like, hey, can I talk to you, and so they're bringing other people in on this plan.
Mm-hmm.
Then we have a scene with Cordelia and Wesley, and they are packing up all the boxes in the library shelves. Now, the first time I saw this, I was so like into watching what was happening between these two that I didn't realize that they were packing up shelves.
Oh, it's so funny.
When they actually go through the library at the end and there's no shelves, I'm like, what? Are no books on the shelves? I'm like, what?
Yeah.
What? How did that happen?
I love that. It's the, you know, presumably end of the world. We had the apocalypse conversation already. But anyway, presumably the end of the world, lives on the line, trying to like fight this real demon, right? You know, had all this setup about how big and massive and unstoppable this real demon is. And they come up with this plan. And then Giles makes sure to like designate that we have to save the books.
You do have to save the books. I would be the same way. You don't get rid of books. You don't burn books.
Do not blow up the books. I love it. It makes me so happy.
No, never, ever. Books are friends.
But yeah, this scene happens.
Okay, so Wesley and Cordelia are kind of very breathlessly excited, talking to each other, and it's very much a romance movie culmination type.
It's just this big buildup, right? He's about to leave town. They've got this forbidden love. It's just so, you know, just windswept in the library. Yeah.
Cordelia does a lot of repeating what he says.
Yeah, gasping. You
know. And then they come together in a passionate embrace. And it's not really work.
It doesn't really work.
They can't really figure out where their hands go. And Wesley's doing this weird crouch thing while he's kissing her. And then so they stop. Wait a few seconds and they try again.
Yeah. You know, they gave it a good college try. Like, you got to give them that.
It doesn't work.
It still doesn't work.
They stop and back up from each other, and Cordelia's like, so good luck in England. And he's like, yeah, thanks. I'll drop a line sometime. And she says, that'd be neat.
Yes.
And I like how they did this, because at this point, they already knew that Cordelia and Wesley were both going to move to the Angel show. Like, to Angel.
Yeah. I'm not sure if they ever knew that Wesley was going to be a regular until they had the situation happen later. But It is cool. It's a great setup for their the rest of their relationship. The part that I really like about this.
See, I always kind of thought they just don't want Cordelia and Wesley to both go to the show and like be in a relationship.
Yeah, I don't.
They wanted that whole thing ended before.
This whole setup and payoff is brilliant. It's the perfect way to end this, of just like they're being so like ridiculously into the idealized version of each other in this like really awkward, like always praising every positive quality they can and being hyper aware and hyper jealous of each other. But then like when they actually try to do anything intimate, they're just like, ooh, no, that didn't work.
That didn't work out.
But I like that it's not just Cordelia like, oh, he doesn't know how to kiss, or like Wesley being like, they're both like are like unsettled by it.
Yeah, no, it doesn't work for anybody, either one.
Nobody likes this. And it could have been easy enough to play, like, because Wesley's such the comic relief. It could have been easy to play the idea that, oh, Wesley just doesn't have a clue what he does, and now Cordelia's no longer interested, and Wesley's just like, aw. But, like, the fact that they linger on, like, Wesley in the background going like, bleh, while Cordelia's turned away, like he's just like kind of repulsed by what just happened himself. I think it's a nice little touch to make sure like, yeah, that wasn't working for anybody involved. So yeah, that's the end of the Wesley-Cordelia romantic relationship, at least.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
And then we have Oz and Willow and in Oz's van, and they're unloading giant sacks of fertilizer.
Mm-hmm.
And Jonathan and Larry are wheeling them away in a shopping cart.
Perfect.
So they take them away, and then it's just Willow and Oz, and they talk about being nervous and whether or not they're going to get through this, and then they kiss. And Willow's like, how long till graduation? And Oz is like, a little while. And so, yeah, they have some alone time in the van.
You know, it could be the end of the world.
And then we have the very last conversation that Angel and Buffy have in this episode. When Buffy comes back from getting the knife, Angel asks, you get what you needed? And she says, yeah. And they talk about needing more weapons. And he asks her how she is. And she says, I heal fast. And Angel says, I'm not saying goodbye. We make it through this, I'm just going to go. And then he says, do you understand? And I'm like, what did she not understand about that? And in a moment, and then she nods, and he's like, there's just too much to, and she holds up her hand like, we're not doing this.
We're done.
And then they walk away from each other.
Yep.
And that's it.
Yeah,
I don't know.
That's it. Yay, trauma.
Okay, so then we are at graduation, and people are sitting there, and Willow is conspicuously absent. Although these seating arrangements, I have issue with the seating arrangements here. Because Willow and Buffy are right beside each other. And it's Buffy Summers and Willie Rosenberg.
Yeah.
Are we going to pretend in this giant graduating class there is nobody whose last name starts with a T?
Well, and I mean, the other way to be maybe organized it is by like some kind of like GPA, but you're just like, no, that still doesn't make any sense for Buffy and Willow to be sitting next to each other. They just get to sit where they want. There's only like 100 students.
Yeah, everybody sits where they want.
Yeah, it's free fall. You know, you just have to like dig through all the diplomas when they get up there. There's no organization in any of this.
Or that there's nobody whose last name starts with an R. They have a letter before O on it. It's just weird.
They all have died.
And like Oz's name is Osborne. So like,
well, and aren't like Xander and Cordelia next to each other too? That's Chase and Harris.
Yeah, because nobody's last name starts with a D or an F. Yeah, that's weird. Anyway, okay, so Snyder gets up there and he basically welcomes them all like Snyder.
Congratulations to the class of 1999. You all proved more or less adequate. This is a time of celebration, so sit still and be quiet.
He welcomes the guest speaker, who is the mayor. He says to a student, I saw that gesture. You see me after graduation. Now, here's the thing. At this point, Snyder has no more power over these kids. They have already graduated. This is just the ceremony. They've already graduated. The final grades have been turned in. They know who's graduated.
I don't care.
You can't do this.
Like, I don't care.
Come see him after graduation.
You see me after graduation is my favorite line from this episode. It's so good.
I mean, it is, but, like, it's not accurate. It wouldn't happen. He's got no more power.
This is a man who is willing to stand up against a giant snake demon and says, I demand order. He don't care whether he has power or not. He's going to believe he does.
Yeah. So, at this point, Willow shows up, and we see Willow and Oz slip into their seats. And Willow goes, am I late? Did we fight? Like, no, you haven't fought. Yeah, y'all fought, and y'all had the battle, and then everybody just calmly sat back down.
Yeah, we got to finish up the ceremony.
Yeah. Oh, and then the mayor starts to give his speech, and he talks for a little bit, and then Buffy is like, oh, my God, he's going to do the whole speech. Which kind of, that no one listens to graduation speeches. The only time anyone ever listens is when they're the family of the valedictorian. And then they might listen. Nobody else is listening. Yeah.
Oh, I've laughed so much in the last little bit.
They decide that that's really evil.
Yeah.
And he keeps talking, and then he mentions some stuff in his speech about loss and how some people who should be here today aren't. And when he does it, he's looking right at Buffy, and she kind of stares back at him. And then an eclipse happens, and the mayor starts to, like, looks like he's having, like, stomach pain.
He mentioned before his organs, like, rearranged to prepare. So maybe that's the final, like, part of it is, like, more organ shifting.
Right. Yeah. And he's like, this is a little sooner than I expected. I had a whole section about civic pride. But then he's like, I guess we'll just get to the big finish. And he transforms into a very, very realistic looking giant snake.
Mm-hmm.
And you can tell that CGI was not in 1999. Yeah. Aww. Every time I watch it, I remember again how bad this snake looked. Yeah. All the students jump up, and Snyder, he says this is simply unacceptable.
Yeah. So, like, and here's the thing, though.
Okay.
Here's the thing. Confirmed, right? 100% confirmed that Sunnydale parents are, in fact, the worst parents.
Right? They run. I literally have this, like, in a note. They leave without their kids.
Like, they're out of there. They don't even think about it.
Yeah, I was like, I'm not going to try to get my kid. I'm just going to go. Then Buffy calls out now, and all the really cool music, and the class drops their robes, and they all have weapons, and they start the fight. Xander kind of directs everybody for a little while before a free-for-all starts. They have Bowman, and then they have, like, first wave and second wave. And
they have flame units.
Yeah, they have flame units. Sadly, Larry dies. Mayor kills Larry. Doesn't eat Larry.
No.
He eats some other random kid, but he just kills Larry. And Buffy says, fall back. And then Snyder is like, okay, so you're a giant snake, but this is my school. And you will be orderly. I want quiet. And the mayor eats him.
Yeah.
So now we have two principals that have been eaten.
Yes.
Which is,
a very short but important counter.
And Buffy tells everybody to get back and tells Willow to go. And they all, like, go running hand to hand down the steps.
Yeah. We do have a cutaway at one point amidst the battle up top. We have a cutaway where it shows that Angel, Percy, and Wesley are leading a charge of people flanking the vampires that are set to flank the students. So it's flankception. And then, like, Wesley gets knocked down immediately, clotheslined immediately, and lays on his back for the rest of the fight.
Yeah, and weirdly, in the script, it says that we see Wesley getting knocked on his ass after some decent fighting on his part, and he lands painfully.
Oh, he didn't even get the decent fighting. I'm so mad now.
We see Harmony get eaten by a vamp.
Mm-hmm. That vampire did not listen to the mayor.
No, and apparently he turns her.
Yeah.
She thought she was pretty.
Yeah, I'm not exactly sure how the logistics worked on all of that, but that happens.
Maybe he went back and got her.
Yeah.
Or took her with him. And then...
I love Xander just yelling at everybody, like, you guys are the right flank. You're supposed to be here. Why are nobody listening?
Yeah.
It's just an absolute chaos of, like, vampires and high school student mosh pit, and Xander's still trying to give orders.
Yeah. And then Buffy is like, hey, and the mayor as a giant snake looks down at him and she's holding Faith's knife and mm-hmm. says, remember this? I took it from Faith and stuck it in her gut. It slid in her like she was butter. And then, like, you can tell the mayor is reacting even, like, as a snake. Mm-hmm. and he's like, you want to take it back from me? And then runs, and she runs back into the school through the corridor, and the snake chases her, destroying the school along the way. She runs through the library and out the back door of the library, this door that we knew was there but have never seen before. She runs through and lands at Giles' feet. And as she does that, the mayor enters the library and sees many big metal drums and things of dynamite and bags of fertilizer and a whole lot of wires. Okay, so in the episode, the mayor says, oh gosh, as mm-hmm. a giant snake.
Mm-hmm.
That is not in the script. In the script, Giles just hits the thing and it goes boom. It says room go boom.
Room go boom.
So everything blasts out and the school explodes.
Yeah. And like...
everyone turns to watch.
Mm-hmm.
And Jonathan shields Cordelia's eyes.
Yes.
Yeah. I like that.
But like...
that's not in the script either, but I like it.
So here's my question. Obviously, they put a bunch of explosives in the library. They're like, there's the huge pile of explosives in the library, right?
Right.
Did they also set up a bunch of other explosives throughout the school? Or are we just to suspect that the school is just rigged in such a way that it's going to have a bunch of combustible material like this that just blows up the entire school?
It was a gas leak.
Like, there's even a cutaway, like the famous clock tower. Remember the famous clock tower? You know, that yeah. Sunnydale High clock tower? There's even a shot of that specifically exploding. Like, there's a bunch of explosive material, like, in the tower.
Maybe they could have pushed it all together, like, hooked it all together.
Yeah.
And just never showed us.
They knew he was going to be very long, so they wanted to make sure if he stretched all the way through the school, they were going to get all of them. I mean, it you could make reasoning for it, but it's just funny because I'm just like, that entire school went up. The yeah. library was definitely the central point, but every part of that every part of that school had explosives in it.
It could have, and they were all just connected. But okay, then we have the next scene where it is a disaster trauma area. There, a disaster has formed. There's fire trucks and ambulances and people helping the wounded, and they're hugging and crying. Wesley is being loaded into an ambulance, talking about how much pain he's in and being ignored.
He asked for an aspirin, so clearly he's in a lot of pain.
Yeah. Xander kind of says that they got off easy. And Buffy is just searching, like mm-hmm. she's looking around everywhere. And then Xander tells her he made it through the fight.
Yeah.
Just to.
Like, yeah. I like this moment, especially when you compare it to the end of season two. When, yeah. You know, if you have that juxtaposition of the kick his ass line versus this, he made it through. He survived. He's alive. You can kind of see that there's a little bit of acceptance over there on Xander's side. And it's just a little sweet moment that they have, especially with, you know, mm-hmm. all of the yep. tension that was still lingering in places earlier. So we're showing some growth. So Giles comes up and asks Buffy how she's doing. And she says that she's tired and that she hasn't processed everything.
My brain isn't really functioning on the higher levels. It's pretty much fire bad, tree pretty.
Love that quote.
Beautiful. And then he says that she did very well, and though it may not interest her, he was able to ferret out her diploma from the wreckage. And
which is also yeah. is very sweet, but not realistic, because yeah. the diplomas that you get during actual graduation are just a rolled up piece of paper. You actually get your real diploma in the mail. Or you pick it up at the school. Like, the ones you get at graduation in most schools are not real.
Yeah. Sunnydale High does everything a little different.
Yeah.
And then we get this lovely quote, lovely, lovely quote from Giles saying, there is a certain dramatic irony that's attached to all this, a synchronicity that borders on predestination, one might say. And Buffy's just like, no. Fire bad, tree pretty.
Yeah. And then he walks away and she's kind of looking down at her diploma and she feels Angel. She feels him and she mm-hmm. turns and she sees him. And this scene, they are playing up the dark hero part for the Angel show.
He is so standing much, there with fog
so
behind
much
him,
fog.
Yeah, it's just awesome. And he just stands there and looks at her soulfully.
Yeah.
And then he turns and walks away.
Yeah.
No.
It's one of those things. It's so like I'm sure the first time you're watching through this and you're like so emotionally invested and you're just like, oh, but she was willing to die for you, and you watch them stare at each other like this. But like on rewatches after you're kind of over it, you're just like, well, that was awkward.
Yeah. So then we have the whole gang, and they are, it says that they're standing by the curb, but they're actually like sitting on a bench. Kind of outside the remains of the school. And they kind of talk about everything a little bit and have a moment to just deal with the fact that they survived.
Mm-hmm.
And Buffy says it was a hell of a battle. And Oz is like, not the battle, high school. Yeah.
I love that, you know, we're ending the high school years with our five high schoolers here. There's no Giles, there's no Angel. The final scene is of our high schoolers. And it's just, it's a lovely little nod to the Scoobies, the Scooby gang. Our besties.
And they walk off talking to each other, and it's all overlapping. And in the episode, you can't really tell what they're saying. What they're saying is in the script. So Xander says, you know what the best part of high school was? And Buffy says, when we blew it up. Xander says, yeah, that rule. Because you know the thing that made it so special. And Buffy says, was when the school blew up? And Xander says, exactly. And Buffy says, I begin to find you troubling. And Xander says, oh, come on. You know you're all thinking it. And Buffy, well. And Willow says, I was. Cordelia says, pretty much. Oz says, uh-huh. And Buffy says, yeah. And they walk away.
Even Willow, who loves school, was just like, yeah, yeah.
And then they walk away. It pans down to see a very burnt copy of the school yearbook on the ground, which I actually have.
Yeah.
Yeah, most Buffy fans do.
Yeah. So. Oh, man. Woo!
And that was season three.
Yes. I like season three. I've always really appreciated, but it's never been one of my absolute favorite seasons.
It is one of my favorites.
Yeah, I know it's one of your favorites, but like this watch through, I've really enjoyed dissecting it more. It's certainly in ways made me angrier at this season. The Faith story arc, especially, very angry about a lot of that, but also like kind of works with some analysis of systems that exist and unrealistic expectations we place on people and that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So like there's some fun stuff to dissect, but it's a very well polished season. And you know, then we get into season four and it kind of gets a little like more experimental again, and like you have a lot of really great one-off episodes in season four, but the season arc's a little bit of a hot mess in season four. I think season three definitely has great one-off episodes, but still just has like a really solid season arc that I would have loved explored more. I think my biggest gripe about season three is that it needed more time on some of these storylines that they were trying to explore. Some of it definitely felt rushed. Yeah. So like that's always the thing that's kind of like, I've explained this to people. If something's a near miss for me, it leaves a bitter taste in my mouth at times. And there's so much more that they could have done with this season and the storylines that they had and the characters that they were playing with. And so in ways, season three is a little bit of a near miss for me, but exploring it this time and doing a little bit more of a deep dive, I really, really enjoyed it. And I can see why it's a lot of people's favorites. I don't begrudge anybody for saying it's their favorite, because I think it's a solid season.
Mine are three and five, which I think are pretty common seasons to have as favorites. What are yours?
Five is my favorite, and then it kind of fluctuates between two and six as my second favorite, depending on where I'm at emotionally.
I can see that.
Yeah. They're both very depressing seasons, but they're depressing in different ways.
Yeah. And I really love parts of season six. There are some amazing episodes in there, but there's also some.
Yes. So when we come back, we're going to add Angel to the mix, because it turns out Angel's getting his own show. I'm not sure if you've heard of this. So the way we're going to do it is we're going to keep our release schedule the same, but we're going to release basically an episode of Buffy and then an episode of Angel and then go back and forth between the two that way. And so you'll hear from us just as frequently. It's just sometimes we're going to be talking about that broody boy, you know, that broody boy. And
I did the math earlier. With 9 seasons, 22 episodes a season, we have 198 episodes left to go.
Yeesh.
Yeah, so that's like 4 years.
We got a ways.
That's 4 years at one a week.
Yeah.
And we do
every 2 weeks as far as release. We try to record more often. Oof.
8 years. 8 years, Megan.
Commitment. Well, and I hate to say it, but we're going to have to delay it even longer. We're going to have to delay it just a little bit longer. We are going to take a break on our release schedule in between seasons. We will be back on March 1st. That will be our next episode, and we will start off season 4 of Buffy. Woohoo! All right, and with all of that being said, we thank you so much for watching. We thank you for going on this season 3 journey with us, and this is where we say bye!
Bye!
Guys, take a moment to deal with this. We survived.
That was a hell of a battle.
Not the battle. High school. We're taking a moment. And we're done.